Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Long Shots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Long Shots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey out there, rock and rollers, and welcome to another episode of the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast, recorded right here, just off Abbey Road in central London. I want to apologize for the quality of my voice here. Battling a little bit of a spring cold here, maybe because it's not been over 60 degrees Fahrenheit and we're almost in June. But it could be worse. I could have something much worse. I know people around the world are fighting the virus still, especially folks in India, which is a very strong market for us. So I just want to say, hey, we feel you. We're praying for you. And we hope that our little show here brings you a little bit of light in these difficult times. Episode 26 here, we're going to go back to Asia. Episode 25 was all about Asia, our favorite 80s rock supergroup, and their first album, their debut, the eponymously titled Asia, which sold over 10 million copies, went to number one in America, spawned Heat of the Moment, an enormous hit that really kind of defined their career. But after 1982, the band did carry on. They had a solid follow-up, Alpha, but then the band started to encounter some problems. You know, the Asia in Asia, big MTV concert broadcast and satellite, didn't have John Wetton there. He was replaced by Greg Lake. And so the original supergroup was already starting to crack, really only about 18 months after the release of their first big record. But the band did continue on from there, and we want to explore some of that, including when they got back together in the noughties, to not only tour, but to put out some really solid albums. And they're actually re-releasing those in a nice clamshell case, you know, Original Asia 2007 to 2013, with a great live show from Tokyo and the three studio albums they made as the original group during that era. I'm also going to touch a little bit on the John Payne era. But you know, when there's a supergroup, the inherent problem with a supergroup is people have other options. They have other stuff to do. They can go back to the band that made them famous. They can go out and do solo stuff. They're not beholden to this supergroup. And that's exactly kind of what happened to Asia. Just another case of the fact that Asia, they're kind of defined by what might have been. Yeah, you have a number one album, you sell 10 million copies, that's great. But after that, they just kind of lost that glory. They never really quite got it back. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that here on part two on Asia, Alpha to Omega. Now, as always, we want you to follow us on Twitter at @ugly_werewolf or at @actionjack72. And check out all past episodes at www.uglyamericanwerewolf.libsyn.com. And make sure to download and subscribe and leave reviews anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you might like to get them. So you knew if we were going to do one episode on the Asia's first album, you know there's going to be a second episode on the rest. So just kick back. We're going from 1983 all the way to present day with Asia here on The Wolf.
Pantheon Podcast listeners, Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner. And Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
And yeah, this is when the cracks in the armor start to come out and problems start to come into it and people start to get bent out of shape. And I think and I was thinking about this too, moving into phase two of this band, what made it attractive to people made it unattractive because you sold this as these four guys. Like even when the Beatles started, they were just four dudes and then they became this huge thing. This was marketed as this package.
Right.
And then once you start to switch out people, you're like, well, this isn't even the same thing anymore.
Well, and another song that was done during, I think it was for the sessions for the first record, and maybe it's the second, but I think it was the first record, was Lying to Yourself. It's a track written by Steve Howe and John Wetton, and it's got some incredible guitar work on it from Steve. And again, it's got John Wetton's vocals up front there, talking about some emotional stuff. It didn't make the record. You can't put everything from the sessions on the record, I guess. It ended up on Geffen did a release, Very Best of Asia. Also, Steve Howe has two incredible anthologies, one from his days in his various bands, which includes Yes and Bodest and GTR and all these different bands, and then his solo stuff. Steve Howe's put out an incredible amount of music, something like 50 original records he's played on, not including greatest hits. Wow. And live albums. He just continues to crank it out over the years. And obviously he puts Heat of the Moment on that, on the band's one. But Lying to Yourself is on there. It's a fantastic song. You know, if this album had come out 5 years later when CDs were more prevalent and you don't just have to have 44 minutes, it probably would have been on the record. But it wasn't. And it's one of my very favorites. But then, yes, David Geffen smells money. He's like, wow, look, I just had the band of the year. Kolodner came over and made these guys out of thin air. We got some killer videos. Let's do it again. Let's get an album out in 1983. And from what the band members I've heard them say over the years is they were just kind of pushed, right? It's like we didn't really have time to kind of figure out who we were as a band. We didn't have time to decide who was right. Because on the first album, Steve Howe wrote about half the tracks, maybe more if you include the B-sides and stuff like that, or was a co-writer. Wetton wrote or co-wrote all of them. Downs was on most all of them. Carl was on Time Again. But Steve Howe, who was a prolific writer, was a huge contributor. And I think because the big hits were written by Wetton and Downs, you know, Kolodner and Geffen are like, let's just get the Downs Wetton compositions on. You two are the writers.
That's the secret sauce.
Right, yeah. You two are the writers. Let's do that. And every single track is written by John Wetton and Jeff Downs, except for
Lying to Yourself.
Yeah, Lying to Yourself, which, okay, I guess it was from this era. Lying to Yourself was written by Wetton and Howe, and Smiles Left Your Eyes was Wetton solo, basically. But yeah, they kind of forced it through. I mean, they took 5 or so months to do the first one. They took 3 to do the second. Like, hey, we got to get this out for the summer. We got to get you out there on tour. And now look, there's some great stuff on here. And the video for Don't Cry is kind of amazing. It's a huge production. It's kind of like an Indiana Jones kind of theme thing, you know? And you can see they're in like a Hollywood studio or a huge soundstage where they have all these sets and stuff like that. And they're finding a pyramid and they're, you know, all this kind of stuff. Poor Jeff. It looks like they left. If Jeff is out in the sun for 2 minutes, he's going to sunburn. He's like the whitest Englishman in history, which is kind of really saying something. And like, oh God, Jeff's going to burn if you leave him out there any longer, you know? But yeah, it was kind of forced out there. And again, they hadn't written Don't Cry. When Kolodner heard the record, he's like, okay, I don't hear a single yet. We got a Jeff. You and John get back in there and give me a number single. And then they do Don't Cry, which this is the one I kind of remember better. I remember Don't Cry on the radio. Maybe it's because I was a year older and I was more into music. And when I was 10, I had some tapes, you know, and I was listening to the radio more and I was watching MTV a little bit more. I just remember Don't Cry being all over the place.
Yeah, and I think if you go back and look at this, the story is the same over and over and over again. You know, like you said, you have this big hit. The record company has lightning in a bottle. model. Mm-hmm. I want it again. Okay, we just wrote the record. We just toured for 1 million gigs. Right. We just want to take some time off and just, you know, if we could come back in about 6-8 months, no, now, put it out now. And then, you know, to your point, you write these songs. Okay, you wanted songs, here are the songs. Well, I don't hear a single yet, right? All right. Well, let's go back and write another one then to make you happy. And so, yeah, it goes from being fun, like, hey, you know, we had a really great time putting this all together. Like, now this is work. I'm just getting beat up. And then, yeah, we've got this concept and we're going to go to the jungle and film. What? I don't want to be out in the sun for 1 million hours. I'm not an actor. I'm a musician.
Yeah.
But then in the MTV days, no, you had to be an actor. We have to have a video. This has to be big if we're going to sell your record. So, yeah, I think it just takes a toll on people to just get beat down. It goes from being fun to just being a grind.
Right. And I think John Wetton was starting to drink a little bit more at this point, and suddenly there's a lot more pressure. The B-side, Daylight, is another great song that doesn't appear on the album originally, but, you know, fits in very well with the rest of the tracks. We don't necessarily have to go track by track with this one, but, I mean, here's the thing. Alpha's not a bad album. You know, The Smile Has Left Your Eyes was a little bit a minor hit for them. I like My Own Time, you know, Do What I Want To Anyway, Never in a Million Years. The song I have a problem with is The Heat Goes On. Much like I have a problem with Metallica's Unforgiven 2.
I knew we were going to get to this, yeah.
I mean, you know, if the first song wasn't Heat of the Moment and an enormous hit, you never would have written a song called The Heat Goes On. To me, that's cheesy. And Stand Alone, is it a good song? Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's got the Asia qualities to it. It's kind of got that momentous thing about it with the keyboards. But come on, man. Your best song's Heat of the Moment. You follow it up with The Heat Goes On. You're killing me.
Yeah, you're better than that. Yeah, you're trying to go back to the well again. Yeah, nostalgia is, you're trying to play on my heartstrings here. Yeah, a friend of mine, he says that Rick James's quote is, you know, cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
I've got a friend that says nostalgia is a hell of a drug. So, yeah, you're trying to recreate the deal. And I think that's what it comes down to. It's always the fight between the artists and the A&R people who are like, I'm here to make this artistic expression and I'm here to sell 1 million records.
Right.
So that's what we're going to do. And I'm going to beat you into submission.
The second side, Eye to Eye, The Last to Know, I think is a good song. True Colors was actually the B-side to Don't Cry in the UK. I like Midnight Sun. It's kind of a mellow, chill song. And then Open Your Eyes is one that, you know, it kind of goes on. It's over 6 minutes long. It's probably one that's probably fun to play live. But, you know, hey, look, it fit well with the first album. That's the problem. It's like, you know, the reason Don't Look Back wasn't that big of a success for Boston was because it was basically a rerun of the Boston record. You know, they didn't really seem to grow. It's just like, this just kind of sounds exactly like the first one. And I feel like that's a little bit about what happened here. That's not the worst thing in the world. And they did feel rushed about it. And, you know, like the B-sides are killer, or the, you know, the unreleased stuff is fantastic, but it wasn't as organic, I guess, as it could have.
Correct. And then, you know, even though this came out relatively soon, you know, things are already starting to move in the pop music world.
Right.
You know, you've got Duran Duran hitting, you've got these, and these guys are older.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not ancient, but I mean, they're older than the other people. So the world is just starting to turn a little bit too.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of really hurt them. And like I said before, I really wonder what would have happened if this had come out first. You kind of had this as like a benchmark, and then you put the big one out second. It's hard when you, like, back to your Huey and the Blowfish deal. I mean, once you knock it out of the park, what's next?
Exactly.
It's going to be a letdown.
And the people who didn't like the first one because it was too AOR, too corporate, too Toto, Journey, REO, Speedwagon, like, they came out in a big way against it. You know, it's like Rolling Stone says, a sort of sonic confection, a concoction of tasty melodies, sweet harmonies, and goopy lyrics. intended more for greedy consumption than for artistic appreciation. Ooh. And that's one of the good ones.
and that stinks too, because that really, like, if you read that analysis of it, that's really more on the record company. That's not on them. That's something where it's like, yeah, see, and then if you're the band, you bring that to them. You say, I told you we didn't want to do it like this. I told you this was rushed. I told you this was schlocky, and you made me do it anyway.
And even someone who's like, hey, I like these three songs, but there's nothing on Alpha that packs the sheer sonic force of the band's debut. You're kind of right about that. It's hard for me to, because there's no clunkers anywhere on the first one. And the second one, it's kind of like a carbon copy, a facsimile. It's not quite the same. Kerrang was the best. Of course, Kerrang's more of a hard rock, heavy metal band. It's like, Chaz DeWaley of Kerrang said, "This album is complete and utter rubbish from beginning to end and a waste of the good vinyl it's pressed on." Okay. Only Spinal Tap's Shark Sandwich review was worse than that, which was, of course, a two-word review. Shark Sandwich.
Reviewed in two words, yes.
But the fact of the matter is, man, I, you know, you put these two albums together with the three B-sides, Ride Easy, Daylight, and Lying to Yourself. You put all 22 songs together on two discs. I think it's a fantastic listen.
I think you're right. I think if you can get past that and you can actually listen to it objectively, I think you're absolutely right. It's just that when this thing came out, there was so much riding on it that it, I can't think of a situation where, unless you could have had a hit that was bigger, that it would, it could have gone any other way than this. This was going to happen. They were going to hit a brick wall on this deal.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, look, I listened to Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules together. Those two together can make one incredible unit. Is Mob Rules a little weaker than Heaven and Hell? Yeah, probably. You know, it's kind of, but and obviously they had a different player playing drums on there. But still, you know, if you take them as one unit, I think it's pretty spectacular. And of course, then now they're a headliner. They get to go out and tour. And I think the 83 tour was when, if we could, I know you're going to make that time machine to go to the Texas Jam. But
still working on it.
Yeah. Seeing them in 83 would have been amazing because they had both these albums. Plus, they can do some stuff from, they're confident enough that they can do a little bit of stuff from their back catalogs if they need to. You know, and obviously Steve Howe can still do his solos and stuff. But yeah, then you really are a headliner. They had a bigger stage. Jeff was in the Guinness Book of World Records for having the most keyboards on stage because it was like 29 or something sick like that. And he would play them all at one point or another. There's a great photo of the four of them. They're all playing one of the keyboards while John's singing into one of the mics. All four of them are playing at least one of the keyboards. I'm like, that would probably be kind of a neat thing to see on stage at some point, you know?
Well, I like that. Yeah, I like that there's, what is it, Hard Luck Woman, when Paul Stanley has the double neck and Ace is reaching over him to play the top part. Mm-hmm. That's just cool. Like, I'm sure it's pretty hard to do to get everybody put together, but the visual is really cool when you've got somebody, you've got four guys who can play that well, that they don't step on each other's toes.
Yeah, and Jeff's keyboard setup was so big. Usually the keyboard's to the side, like, Steve Howe's on one side, Jeff's on the other, John the singer's in the middle, Carl's behind him. But they had to build a riser kind of behind Carl to accommodate Jeff and his 29 or whatever it was, keyboards and organs. So, you know, it was kind of a big deal, you know. And I think they did pretty well. So then end of the year, they have this huge opportunity, an enormous opportunity to be the first band ever broadcast live via satellite in concert via MTV to the USA. They make this huge deal out of it. Asia in Asia. First time ever broadcast over satellite. They were advertising it like crazy for months and months. What we didn't realize is that John Wetton's alcoholism had really started to be a problem. And my guess is that Steve Howe had a problem with this. Because Steve Howe has been a vegetarian for nearly 50 years now. Although he experimented with, you know, drugs and certainly psychedelics in the 60s, I don't think he really does any kind of drugs other than what the doctor gives him anymore. He doesn't really drink. Maybe he'll have a glass of wine with dinner with his wife. So he's pretty clean and he knows, hey, here we go. Here we're going on this big, you know, thing. We got to keep it together. And he probably got cross with John Wetton, and they kicked him out of the band, basically. So to make sure they could still keep that date, and they also had a tour in the rest of Japan, and to this day, Asia is still very popular in Japan, no doubt because of their name, I'm sure has something to do with it. By the way, there was a rumor that they got their name, like, what are we going to call this band? I don't know. And they said, well, let's just look at the dictionary. They just flipped open the page, pointed to something, and it was Asia. But they don't put proper names in the dictionary, right? Usually, yeah. You know, and that's even something one of them said, like, that's not true. I think they said, this is going to be a big band. We're going to need a big name. And Asia is obviously a big continent. So I think that's where it came from. But so they kicked him out. So to make sure they could still pull it off and do the MTV thing and all that, they brought in Greg Lake, Carl Palmer's old buddy from Emerson, Lake & Palmer. And obviously John Wetton had replaced Greg Lake in King Crimson. So now it's Greg Lake's turn to replace him in Asia. And I got to tell you, he's a fine bass player, and he can sing ELP songs well, but he can't sing anything like John Wetton, man.
Well, okay, so a couple things on that. First of all, we're bagging on this dude, who you're right. If you watch that video, he's trying to replace him. He's trying to sing like him. But from what I understand, this whole thing happened really quick.
It did.
For him to be able to come in and ham and egg this concert is amazing testament to Greg Lake, his musicianship, his professionalism, because to your point, they hyped this as the real band. And I think it was very close to the airtime when they were like, this isn't going to happen. And to your point about Steve Howe, I can only imagine how insane that would make you if you're this perfectionist, professional musician, and you've got a guy who maybe he'll show up, maybe he won't. And if he shows up, maybe he can play and maybe he can. It's like, we've got all of this giant machine is rolling and you're Mr. We don't know what we're going to get. So yeah, I think that kind of went off with a thud because, like you said, okay, here we go. Get to see the band. Wait, who is this guy? Wait a minute. What is this?
Yeah, and I think he turned it down at first. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I could have the timing off here, but I feel like they kicked him out of the band in October, and the concert was like December 6th or something like that. You know, it's like they don't have a whole lot of time. Either they have to cancel and miss this opportunity, or they can get somebody else in there. So look, he went in and did his best. But like when they do Here Comes the Feeling, and he goes, here with me, you know, you can hear like crack. It's like, oh, that is poor, man. That sucks. But it's not his fault.
And I think there was the other dig on it was I think there were a couple of songs that they purposely played in different tunes. Mm-hmm. Like they tuned it down so he could sing it. So yeah, it all sounded a little wonky.
Right.
And I'm sure that the people who were watching the show live, the Japanese people are very, very polite. Mm-hmm. I don't think they would have gotten the same reception here in the United States. There would have been boos and things thrown at them and stuff like that.
Well, and Jeff Downs said, because it wasn't just that show. They did a tour of Japan with Greg Lake. That was the one that's famous. They made a video. They released a VHS on it. It's been very popular on the bootleg circuit for years. He's like, financially, it was a successful tour, but musically, it just didn't work out. It didn't fit. So, you know, we got this great thing at the end of the year. We made some good money. But that really kind of marks the end of Original Asia until 2006, because then in 1984, you know, the band and Geffen kind of recognized, okay, let's get John Wetton back in here because he sounds right and it's going to work. But his thing was like, all right, I'll come back as long as there's no Steve Howe in the band.
Yeah, that was a huge... obviously a huge bone of contention, because to say something like that, not even like, you know what, let's go again, let's, you know, bygones, to straight up say, I'm not coming back with that guy in the band, that's hard feelings. Yeah. You're not getting over that anytime soon. And then, yeah, it's just the sauce was just different now.
Absolutely. But the thing is that all the magic wasn't quite gone yet, at least in my opinion. The next album, and look, by the time, so in 84, they're like, okay, we'll get you back together. We're going to change the band up a little bit here. And it's not like John quit drinking. He cleaned up a little bit, but he's still somewhat of a problem. You know, so they kind of continued to make their records. And so, all right, Steve Howe's gone now. All right, well, who do we get in? Well, so Geffen's like, let's get in Mandy Meyer from Crocus, you know, the Swiss hard band Crocus, because he's a little heavier, and that's kind of where music might be going. So that'll give him and keep up that more arena rock. And Steve Howe obviously wrote that killer part, the beginning of Heat of the Moment, but most of Steve Howe's genius is in some intricate runs and fills and going up and down the neck a little bit. And it also came out in late 1985, you know, released in November 85. So it really kind of, you know, came out in 86. And it just, music had changed by then. And they weren't, you know, they were, I mean, or Duran Duran was getting old at that point, and they were like 24, 25 years old. These guys, except for maybe Jeff, were in their mid-30s, certainly early mid-30s now. You know, they're grown-up rock stars. They're not fresh-faced cover boys. And it had changed. And the single Go got some radio play. It kind of had the cool video with Astra, you know, another great cover by Roger Dean, this kind of female robot Astra. She's running around, but it was just the timing was off and the mix was different and it was over.
And I wonder too, at this point in time, like you said, now we've shifted even farther ahead. Had you called this something different? Who knows if it may have, you know, if the band had been called something different. But I think it was one of those like, oh, Asia, like you said, Duran Duran. I mean, That was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Are they still around and doing stuff? And I think this just never got even a chance to get off the ground on the mainstream circuit.
No, it didn't, you know, and they were trying to work on a tour and the tour got canceled due to lack of interest. It's like, ooh, that kind of hurts a little bit. But, yeah. but they waited too long, you know, and meanwhile, Steve had gone off to do GTR with Steve Hackett, which was produced by Jeff Downs. And, you know, and then, of course, going forward, okay, he can go back to Yes. Well, maybe not. He has to go back to Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, and Howe. But, you know, he's got options, you know. So, and they all kind of went their separate ways after that. I mean, Mandy Meyer was not cool to me. Didn't fit in. But here's the thing. There's some songs on here, and they're all written, again, by John Wetton and Jeff Downs. Except, you know, Hard on Me was written by Wetton, and Too Late was written by Wetton, Downs, and Palmer. Otherwise, once again, they're like, hey, just let John and Jeff do all the writing. There are some really good songs on here, Asia songs, that had Steve Howe played on them, they would have been totally different. And this could have fit well with the first two albums. Hard on Me is a good song. Voice of America, it's kind of an anthem kind of thing. But Too Late, I think, is a really good song. I think it was the B-side to Go and ended up on Aurora. Of course, they named this album Astra. They were going to name it Arcadia, except the Duran Duran spinoff was naming themselves. The Simon Le Bon, Nick Rhodes spinoff was naming themselves Arcadia. So they changed it to Astra. Aurora was an EP they put out with their B-sides. I thought Too Late was great. You know, I just think if they had kept the original band together and, of course, let Steve Howe write a little bit, I think this could have been really good, but they missed out.
Yeah, and I think the thing that sucks, I mean, like you're saying, Mandy Meyer, I don't know if he's written other stuff or if he's just a musician, but I mean, so you've got a guy who's in the band who basically at this point in time is just a hired gun. Mm-hmm. And I think that's always kind of a weird deal too, because that just changes the chemistry when it's just like, you know, you sit there, I'll play this, okay. Go sit in the corner, okay? it's just not the same. And he's not Steve Howe. To your point, I really wonder what this would have sounded like had they had the original band together and were civil to each other at this point in time.
And you talk about hired guns. In his book, All My Yesterdays, Steve Howe tells a story that in 1985, John Klodner gave him a call and said, look, Astra's got good songs, but we need better guitar work on it. I'll pay you $75,000 to come and do overdubs on the record so we can get it out there. And that's a lot of money. That's like close to $200,000 today, which is, I'm sure, more than they were paying Mandy Meyer to be on the record.
To do session work?
Yeah. You know, but I guess to his credit, he said, no, you know, I was asked to leave. I'm not in that band. I'm not going to tour it. No, I'm doing my own thing and I don't need it. But man, I really would have loved to have heard what he would have done with these songs, because about half the songs are pretty good and they would fit into the Asia catalog well. And if you had Steve Howe on them, Hard on Me, Rock and Roll Dream, Too Late, Go, if you had Steve Howe on some of these, they would have been good. Now, some of them are not that great. I love Now to Eternity. Countdown to Zero, the beginning of it, is what they used in theaters in America to show We Have THX Sound, that kind of, that's Countdown to Zero.
Yeah. That's, you know, right, yeah.
You heard that for years when you went to the theater. Yeah. I'm like, that's Asia. Holy mackerel, I never knew that. But yeah, but that's Asia. I think Too Late's probably the standout to me, but it's just like, it doesn't matter. You know, they missed their opportunity. They kicked out Steve Howe. Their tour got canceled, and that's it. And they basically went away. The song Gypsy Soul is credited to Asia on the Over the Top soundtrack, but it's really John Wetton as a solo artist. It's just like they could sell it better as an Asia song, I guess. And yeah, and you know, they did a tour in 89, 91 with everyone but Howe. Pat Thrall was on guitar, and it kind of helped them a little bit. And they did the Then and Now, which we got. Days Like These was a decent hit for them.
Correct.
On mainstream rock, but it was past, you know. And then you get into the 90s, John Wetton left for good for a while, and they got this guy John Payne in, who was a bass player and singer, a talented guy, no doubt about it, talented man, and they forged a sound for Asia. They did albums together, and they did Aqua, which also featured some Steve Howe. They did Aria, Arena, Aura. Eventually they did a record in the 2000s called Silent Nation. And there's some good prog pop kind of songs on there. John Payne did a good job creating something new, but it's just not the same. And when we saw him in 92, it's like, okay, it's cool. And Jeff comes out with his guitar for Heat of the Moment and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's not the same.
Yeah, and the other problem too is that they did that then and now greatest hits. Okay, so okay, now we're getting the band back together. Cool. Okay, here we go. Well, it wasn't really the whole band. And then they put out a new record and now Wetness, like you said, is gone again. So fans are like, wait a minute, what is happening here? Stop this. There's too many people coming in and out. I don't even know what this is. And then you get to the point where it's like, I mean, for all intents and purposes, that Aqua record, it's a different band. Like yeah. Now you're just trying to sell me, are you just trying to sell me tickets because to latch on to something? Like if they, I mean, we saw it because we wanted to see them play Heat of the Moment. Okay, let's be honest. And, I mean, would we have gone to see it if Steve Howe wasn't even a part of it? I don't know. I don't know if that sweetened deal up enough.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the thing is, you couldn't learn about that stuff as easily back in the, you know, it's just like if we heard it on the radio or we saw it on a flyer in a record store or something, like, that's how you heard about it. And I think we heard about it on the radio, like, okay, let's go check it out.
Yeah.
And it was cool to see Steve Howe. It was cool to see Jeff hop around with his guitar. And John Payne, hey, God love him. He's out trying to earn a living and do something. And they did. They forged a sound. Look, if you listen to Aqua, I don't have to tell you which track Steve Howe plays on. If you just listen to it, you could say, okay, he's on one, he's on four, he's on six. You can tell by listening. I don't have to list them for you.
Yeah.
They had more guys in and out of their band than Yes and Spinal Tap throughout like the next 15 years. It was amazing. And some really good players. I mean, Chris Slade was their drummer for a while. Chris Slade played in the Firm with Jimmy Page and Paul Rodgers and in AC/DC during the Thunderstruck years. You know, and he filled in for Phil Rudd recently in the last few years when he couldn't do it because he had some, let's call them legal difficulties.
Legal misunderstandings, yes, I'm like, correct. Well,
that's what you played in AC/DC and you played with Jimmy Page and Paul Rodgers. Hey, play in Asia, gig out a little bit. But they really fell off the radar. They never got on the radio again. They never made videos really again. And they didn't tour much. And like they put out an album and nobody really wants to hear. And for a while, either in the late 90s, early 2000s, John Payne and Jeff would be like, okay, we'll play an acoustic show anywhere in America. If the fans put up $3,000 or more, we'll come and play for you anywhere. I'm like, hey, that's really neat. But it's like, that's really sad too in a lot of ways, you know?
Well, it stinks too when you see somebody like that who you know they're talented. Mm-hmm. And then you hear somebody who, I mean, you can pick this. I'm not going to tell you who to pick, but that's, you see them, they get to be famous that mm-hmm. really have what I consider to be no talent. So it could just be a marketing thing. So it just stinks that they were never able to recreate that magic again and move forward. It's just the music business it will just tear you apart and grind you under the wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And some people can take it, some people can't.
Right. And, you know, they kind of continue to have cool album covers, you know, like Aqua mm-hmm. is Roger Dean-esque. It's not by Roger Dean, but it's like something Roger Dean would do.
Yeah.
You know, Roger Dean did the next one. What was that? Aria. Mm-hmm. Did he do Arena? Because Arena looks very Dean-ish. Hold on, let me see here. No, see, he did the logo, but another guy did the cover. Rodney Matthews did the cover art, right? Because they can't afford Roger Dean anymore, right? They just can't.
And who knows if Roger Dean's like, you know what, I don't even want to be affiliated with this anymore. I don't even know what this band is.
Right.
But you're right. I can imagine what kind of fee that Dean
commands.
Gets for record. But again, he did. But then Dean went on to do the Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman & Howe cover. So that was, I think maybe he was aligning himself more with Howe than the Asia guys.
Well, you know, it's who can pay? I mean, Yes probably has enough money to pay, whereas, you know, Asia, for the most part, didn't. Now, I think he came back for Aura, if that's, yes. He came back for Aura, which is what they did in 2001. And again, you know, there are a couple of good songs on here. They have all sorts of great guest musicians on some of these. It's just no one cares, you know, no one's listening.
Yeah.
I mean, Vinny Culotta on the drums, he's awesome. You know, he played with Jeff Beck. He's amazing. Chris Slade on the drums, he's obviously awesome. Simon Phillips on the drums, plays with The Who before, you know, Ringo's kid took over. You know, they've got all these great musicians to come in and play, but it just doesn't make a dent. And, you know, you're still playing at least half of your stuff or a third of it is stuff from the first two albums, because that's what people know, or first three albums. That's what people want to hear.
Correct. Yeah, that's what they, if you just fast forward to that, the rest of the stuff, they're kind of milling around. And that's, it's got to be tough when you're trying to do this at this point in time, because you know that you're giving it your all, you're writing these songs that no one really wants to hear.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot for, that goes for people, classic rock bands these days in general, like even somebody like Journey. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I going to put out a new record? You don't want to hear these. You want to hear Don't Stop Believing. That's why you're here.
That's right.
So it's tough, but it's the way it goes.
It's the way it goes. Now, you know, at least John Wetton and Jeff Downs continued to be friends and work together. They continue to write songs over the years. And Wetton would pop up. You know, I've got this great thing called the Tokyo Tapes from Steve Hackett, where he took a band to Asia to play. And he had like Chester Thompson of Genesis fame on the drums. And he had John Wetton to sing and play bass for him. And so they do Heat of the Moment and they do Court of the Crimson King, but he could also sing on Firth of Fifth and things like that. They did, Wetton and Downs did a few albums called Icon.
Okay, yeah.
That came out in the last couple of decades. And you know, they got to work with guys like Dave Kilminster on guitar and some good folks. And it kind of sparked the, hey, this was a good writing team. Maybe we should try to work this back out. And of course, in 2006, they finally got back together as kind of the whole original band, which I think hurt John Payne's feelings. And he sued them. He's like, hey, look, I've worked hard for 15 years to make this something new and viable. We've put out a lot more records, you know, without John Wetton and Carl Palmer and Steve Howe than we ever made with them. So they're like, okay, fine. The court said you could be Asia featuring John Payne, and, you know, Asia can be original Asia.
That just turns into another whole mess because you're like, Asia, okay, wait a minute, which one is it? And then, yeah, who am I? Wait, I thought I was seeing A and now I'm getting B. What is going on here?
Yeah, there's Queensryche, and then there's Jeff Tate's Queensryche. You know, it's like,
correct, yeah. Alrighty.
So they got back together, and I think it was originally just a tour. They toured to kind of show, they didn't even have a record deal, I don't think. They toured to show that they were viable. And the tour went off great. It was very popular. I got to see him in Chicago, and I'm glad I did, man, because I only saw him once. They may have toured together for 6 or 7 years there, but I only got to see him once. And even though John Wetton was very heavy, not looking very rock star-ish, he could still sing great. And to see all four of them play, and they only played stuff from the first two albums. They didn't get into Astra at all, but they also played stuff like they do Fanfare for the Common Man, you know, to honor ELP. They would do stuff like, they did Video Killed the Radio Star, you know, for Jeff and his Buggles Day.
Yeah.
Obviously, Steve has always done a lot of his like solo work, and you know they let John do some stuff either from Roxy Music or from King Crimson and stuff like that. So they would mix that stuff in, and it was great. And they made three records: Phoenix, Omega, and Triple X. And you know what? They were good. And there's some songs on there that may have fit in well with the old stuff. But again, look, the time has passed. As happy as I was for them to get back together, as happy as I was to see them live, and the live albums from this era, I just adore. They made a bunch of them just because they're playing all these great songs. You know, and they start off Phoenix with Never Again. The last song, An Extraordinary Life, I think was the theme song of one of those, like, America's Got Talent or, you know, one of those cheesy, you know, game shows. You know, that gets people on, that makes them recording artists, you know, takes them off the street or whatever. So that was a little bit big for them. They had a song called Face on the Bridge on the last one that I thought was fantastic. It actually fit, it would have fit perfectly with them back in the day, but it took them a few years to kind of figure that out. And if you culled like the best songs from those three albums, maybe you'd have one killer Asia album. But, you know, I was glad they got back together. I'm glad they toured. But again, they're doing theaters. They're doing clubs. I basically saw them in a club. And maybe they get to open for some other bands along the way. But, you know, I'm just glad they kind of buried the hatchet because that's it. John Wetton has to be out. Okay, fine. Wetton's out. All right, I'm back. But now Steve Howe has to be out. Okay. You know, and then, I mean, it was 25 years later they got back together. Well, it was 23 and a half years that they'd broken up, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is cool because it showed that, and I didn't get to see them live, but I've seen video performances from that era. They still sound really good. You're right. Wetton is, he's heavy in there. I mean, he's not, basically he takes what, you know, like two steps up to the microphone and two steps back.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all the stage moves you're going to get, but it still sounds good. They can all play well. His voice up until the end, I never heard him do a performance where you're like, oh, you missed on that one. He was good all the way up to the end.
I agree with you. He never lost his voice. He continued to do well. And that's the thing. Those albums, they may not be things that I listen to over and over again, but when I hear it, I'm like, Oh, that's good. That's solid John Wetton right there. It's decent Asia. So I was happy about it. And, you know, they kind of got a break. And I think it was 2016-17. They're going to open for Journey. You're talking about Journey. Journey is back. They got the new young singer from the Philippines. They can really sing their all songs again. And Journey in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years has been about as big a touring act as they ever were, even with Steve Perry. They don't do stadiums, but they do arenas all over the country. And I'm not talking like 20 dates. I'm talking like 60, 70, 80 dates. They do amphitheaters. And so I said, you know what? Asia's going to open for them. This is a great way for them to kind of go out on top, right? Big crowds, 15, 20,000 people. No, they're not headliners. But, you know, open up for Journey, that's great. And then people get to see them do their old songs. So I'm like, I'm going to go one more time to go see Asia. Of course, John got colorectal cancer. He had to step out. And Steve had stepped out at I think it was 2013. For a while, Steve was doing double duty. QED Management manages both Asia and Yes. So for years, Asia would open for Yes. But then they would kind of break off to do their own shows sometimes so they could play like their whole set list and not just like 8 or 9 songs. So Steve was kind of doing double duty in Yes, like all this time and Asia. And then towards the end of that 5 years, Jeff did it for maybe a year and a half too, because he replaced, I think it was Oliver Wakeman who replaced Rick Wakeman in Yes. And now he's been in Yes for a long time again. But, you know, it's just hard to do that. And you're in your 60s. It's like, I can just pick one. Well, you pick Yes because they're the bigger band. They've got the bigger gigs. They've got the bigger brand. They've got the bigger songs. So, of course, you would pick Yes. I'm like, that's okay. I want to go hear John Wetton play one more time. And he got cancer, and they had to have Billy Sherwood take over for him on bass and vocals, just like he did for Chris Squire and Yes. But then he died January 31st, 2017. So I still went to see him. I still went to see Asia. It was just Jeff and Carl with a kid named Sam Colson and Billy doing the lyrics, doing the vocals and bass. I was glad to see him on the big stage, but it still just wasn't quite right. I'm like, here it is again. They're that close to being kind of back on the big stage. They get the nice kind of can ride into the sunset here, and it's over.
Yeah. And I think that pretty much in a nutshell encapsulates their whole history. Like, you know, you had it, and then right when you were going to take that next step, something was taken away from, or something happened, or somebody couldn't get along with somebody else. Yeah, it's just the story repeats itself over and over and over again. And it's crazy when you think about bands like the Rolling Stones that have been together for so long that you're like, yeah, I mean, people have dropped out, but there was never that big blow up. There was never that big. It just seems like it's bad luck for them. They just kept stubbing their toe on their way to the promised land.
I know. Yeah. That's my takeaway from Asia. They're super talented individuals. They came together. They had an amazing moment in time in the early 80s. And I'm glad they got to relive some of that in the last 15 or so years. But they just almost were, which is kind of hard to believe. You'll say that for a band who had the number one selling album 1 year in America. They kind of just almost were, you know. And obviously we're not the only people for whom these folks have a special place in their heart. Because like if you see 40-year-old Virgin, you know, and like you framed an Asia poster, how hard do the people laugh at you? You know, but then when he triumphantly goes to get his woman, what do they play? Heat of the moment, right? You know, you see him on South Park. It's not because they're making fun of him. It's because they love that stuff. You know, it's because they're fans. And there's a lot of people that love this music. The critics suck. Who cares what the critics think, man? Like what you like. And I look again. I'm a heavy metal guy. You know, I'm a hard rock guy. Our biggest episodes were on like Iron Maiden and Steve Hackett and Genesis and Rush, not to mention the Eagles. But for whatever reason, those first two Asia albums, they hit me right in the right spot. It's probably because I heard them when I was an impressionable kid and it burned into my brain. It imprinted me in such a way that it's special when it probably shouldn't be. But I'm sorry, it just is. And I will defend them to the day I die.
And that's an interesting take, too, because I think that I would say the same thing. I mean, I listened to them very early. They imprinted on me. But if you go back kind of without any prejudices and listen to the records, I think you're going to say, especially that first one, hey, this is a really good record.
Really good.
Forget the hype. Forget the MTV. Forget the Around the World deal. Just listen to it. just give it a chance, and I think you'll be in the same camp if you like this kind of music.
Absolutely. And here's a funny side story. So, you know, in the late 90s and the early 2000s, vinyl was dead. Nobody wanted vinyl. It was a dead thing. You couldn't get needles for your record players. And so all old record shops were kind of just trying to sell out of their vinyl. So you could buy classic records on vinyl and first print sometimes very, very cheaply. So I got this friend who's basically very puerile adolescent in his humor, right? Kind of like that guy in the eighth grade who's like, oh, look at him, he's gay. And then you get out in his 40s and he's still like that. I'm like, haven't you matured a little bit? Not to mention that it's politically incorrect, but don't you just want to tell a different kind of joke or insult, you know, kind of thing? So when 40-year-old Virgin came out and, you know, there's the big heat of the moment thing in there, and there's the scene in there like, you framed an Asia poster? You know how I know you're gay? Because you're like Asia. So for Christmas, I had the first two Asia LPs. I had bought them at a record store. I might have even gotten them on eBay for like $3 or something like that, because it had the killer Roger Dean artwork, and I kind of wanted to have them. And I had all these frames for, you know, I had a bunch of Stones records that I framed and put on my wall and kind of made a collage out of. And I had all these extras, so I framed the first two Asia records, I wrapped them up and I wrote a note to him and said, you know how I know you're gay? And it's like, and Merry Christmas, you know? And so he's like, okay, that's funny. But now that LPs are back in a big way and their prices are going up, I'm kind of hoping maybe he re-gifts it to me maybe one day. You know how I know you're gay? Nice.
Yes.
I'd be totally gay to get those records back.
It is insane to think about that. Yes, there was a time when, you could not, nobody wanted these things anymore. They were only for collectors who wanted to put them on the wall. That was it. No one's ever going to listen to a vinyl. Why would you?
I know.
And then, you know, you think to yourself, that was, especially the old, like today, if you buy a record that's new today, that's one thing.
Right.
But the classic records, that's all you were going to get. You heard that, the popping of the needle when it went down. Mm-hmm. That's how you originally listened to those records. So that is pretty cool that it's coming back. But yeah, like anything else, oh, how did this get to be $45 for this piece of vinyl? Okay, thank you.
But, you know, to have the artwork in full like that, I mean, those first two especially, the Asia and the Alpha record, it's amazing Roger Dean artwork there, man. Mm-hmm. Classic, iconic. The logo and the eyes on the second one on Alpha. I don't know. It created something that could have been, that should have been bigger than it was. And hey, life happens. Not everybody makes it. That to me is the story of Asia.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was the band that could have been, even though they did have the number one record. They were never able to recapture that secret sauce again. But the thing is, to their test credit, they were around until Wet and Die in some form or another. People were like us. Maybe they'll get back together. Okay, they're back together, but not really. But this time, it's going to happen. The fact that they could keep going along, and even with pain in the band, mm-hmm. is a testament to how great that first record was. That imprint on so many people.
Yeah, you know, and John Payne hasn't had a whole lot of success with Asia featuring John Payne, but they continue to play. They just played something for Alice Cooper called Coopstock, where he played a few songs for him. Original Asia, although it's only half of Original Asia now, kind of continued. Ron Bumblefoot Tall joined the band and became the lead singer, and that let Billy Sherwood just be the bass player, and they still have Jeff and Carl. They continue to play in 2018 and 19, you know, so it's over for me. I'm never going to see him again. But we aren't the only ones who had this kind of odd connection to them. A lot of people really loved this little band and their first two albums. And it's a heck of a legacy. It's just not what it could have been.
Correct. Correct. And I think there are a lot of people who maybe are not as fanatic about it as we are. But I think if you put on that first record, there are people I haven't listened to this thing in, you know, 30 years or whatever. This is a great song. Yeah, you remember it from back then. You just haven't carried it with you out in front.
Yeah, and you know, they did make another album after Steve Howe left, Gravitas, which again has some good songs on it. It's not bad stuff. There's some good stuff on there. Valkyrie was kind of the one that I remember off of there. It was kind of the big single or whatever. But, you know, a few years ago, Jeff Downs did say that he and Wetton were writing together, writing some stuff that would have been like the next Asia album before he died. So hopefully during this time of COVID, when a lot of people had to sit around, I know Jeff was busy. He just did another album with Chris Braid, Downs Braid Association, which has gotten some really good reviews. He's focusing on getting that out, and that came out recently. And obviously, he's going to be back together with Yes when they can tour again next year and do Relayer. But maybe we'll get some of that stuff to see the light of day here.
That would be cool. Even if it was just like an EP or something, if they only had a couple of tracks, yeah, something would be cool. And the nice part is now you can do all that stuff, like you said, at your house. You don't have to go to a big studio. You can mix it on your home equipment. That would be fantastic to hear just anything else that they'd have.
Well, that wraps up another week here at the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you found some insight into this 80s supergroup that maybe you only knew by one song, but actually had a pretty long life, 40 years almost, of Asia in one form or another, and made some great music. And if you haven't picked up or listened to the first two records, you really should. And on June 11th, like I said, it's a nice release of the stuff that Original Asia did in 2007 to 2013. Five-disc set. I think it's only $20 here in the UK, and it's not much more in the US. Pick it up. I bet you'll like it. There's some good stuff on there. We appreciate you listening. Please follow us on Twitter at @ugly_werewolf or at @actionjack72. Make sure you check out all of our past episodes at www.uglyamericanwerewolf.libsyn.com. Next week, we're going to go back to our hard rock roots, and we're going to review AC/DC Live, the 1992 live album that featured AC/DC kind of at the height of their modern day powers, of their post Back in Black powers. When the album came out, it was really the only way you could get any kind of a greatest hits type mix from AC/DC, and it let us hear Brian Johnson do the old Bon Scott tunes as well. Strong off of Thunderstruck and The Razor's Edge, AC/DC Live was fantastic and a breath of fresh air. It was a nice collector's item for casual fans and for the hardcore fans. So we'll be doing a nice review of that next time. We appreciate you listening. Hey, do we get something right? Did we get something wrong? Do we miss the point? You have to tell us. Let us know the episodes, the albums, the bands that you want to hear us do shows on. Reach out to us on Twitter. Reach out to us on our website. Until next time, rock and roll fans all over the world, be cool and stay safe.
Nothing is more powerful than the connection between storyteller and audience. Over 100 million Americans listen to podcasts monthly, forming lasting connections with their favorite creators. Ad Results Media helps breakthrough brands join the conversation with advertising that feels authentic and organic. With over 20 years of expertise in the audio influencer space, Ad Results Media amplifies brands across thousands of shows, publishers, and emerging platforms. Be part of the story. Learn more at adresultsmedia.com/story. That's adresultsmedia.com/story.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com. Pantheon.com. Code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.